The thousand years we call the Middle Ages began not with darkness, but with transformation. When the Western Roman Empire collapsed in the 5th century, it didn't simply vanish, it morphed into something entirely new. Wealthy families buried treasure as insurance against chaos, cities emptied, trade routes dissolved. Yet from this apparent catastrophe emerged the foundation of our modern world. New kingdoms, revolutionary religions, and power structures that still shape global politics today. What looks like an ending is often just a violent beginning in disguise. Rome didn't conquer a quarter of humanity through brute force alone. Its secret weapon was citizenship. Unlike other ancient empires that ruled through ethnic dominance, Rome gradually extended citizenship to provincial elites, retired soldiers, even freed slaves. By 212 AD, Emperor Caracalla granted citizenship to all free people across the provinces. Spanish emperors ruled Romans. African and Syrian blood flowed through imperial veins. This wasn't idealism. It was pragmatic genius. When you give conquered peoples a stake in the system, they stop rebelling and start defending it. Yet Rome's greatest strength masked its darkest shame. The empire ran on slavery. Apuleius described bodies covered with livid weals, whip-scarred backs branded like livestock, ankles perpetually fettered. Even the Spartacus Rebellion, immortalized in countless films, sought only freedom for participants, not abolition of the institution itself. Everyone agreed, slavery was essential to a free society. The contradiction didn't register. Then came Constantine. After reportedly seeing a blazing cross before battle with the message, "In this sign, conquer," he embraced Christianity and issued the Edict of Milan in 313, ending persecution. Within decades, Rome transformed from a pagan empire into Christendom. This wasn't gradual evolution, it was revolution. The same state that once fed Christians to lions now built churches with imperial funds. Power doesn't just change hands, it changes souls. Picture the Volga River in 370 AD. The Huns appear, climate refugees armed with devastating composite bows. Their westward migration triggers a cascade. Displaced Goths flood across the Danube. Desperate and starving, Gothic families face cruel exploitation by Roman officials who force them to exchange children as slaves for dog meat. By 377, Gothic rebellions explode into warfare. At Adrianople, Emperor Valens and 20,000 Romans die in catastrophic defeat. More displaced tribes cross the Rhine in 406, Vandals, Alans, Suili, ravaging Gaul. Britain loses its Roman character almost overnight. By the 440s, estates lie abandoned, trade networks vanish, towns shrink to villages. Desperate British chieftains send the Groan of the Britons to Roman general Aetius. The barbarians drive us to the sea drives us to the barbarians. No help comes. The final Western emperor, teenager Romulus Augustus, lasted 11 months. In September 476, Gothic officer Odoacer overthrew him and sent the imperial regalia to Constantinople. The Western Roman Empire was finished. Yet the barbarians weren't destroying civilization, they were inheriting and transforming it. While Western territories fragmented under barbarian kings, bubonic plague struck the East, ravaging three continents and killing millions. Emperor Justinian pursued an audacious vision: restore Rome's former glory. He believed imperial majesty should be armed with laws as well as glorified with arms. Within 6 months of taking power in 527, he ordered lawyer Trebonian to recodify Roman law. By April 529, they had compiled the Justinianic Code, 12 books covering civil, ecclesiastical, criminal, and public law. Any nation using codified law today owes a debt to this achievement. Justinian's greatest test came during the Nika riots of 532, when Constantinople erupted in violence. Empress Theodora, daughter of a bear trainer, former actress, steeled his resolve, declaring she'd rather die as empress than live as a fugitive. Justinian ordered General Belisarius to massacre rioters trapped in the Hippodrome. 30,000 civilians died. Belisarius then recaptured North Africa from the Vandals with just 15,000 troops, but plague and climate catastrophe, volcanic eruptions in 536, darkened the sky for 18 months, undermined everything. Byzantium survived as a medieval Greek state, but Justinian's dream of Roman restoration died with him. His legal achievements endured far longer than his military conquests. In 634, Khalid ibn al-Walid, the Sword of God, blockaded Damascus into submission. At Yarmouk in 636, his tactical genius crushed a larger Byzantine force. Jerusalem fell in 638. The dying emperor Heraclius whispered, "Rest in peace, Syria." Around 610, merchant Muhammad experienced revelations on Mount Hira. The angel Gabriel commanded him to recite. Muhammad became Allah's final prophet, his revelations forming the Quran. But monotheism threatened Mecca's polytheistic pilgrimage economy. In 622, Muhammad's Hijra to Medina, year 1 of the Islamic calendar, established the first Islamic state, uniting tribes under faith. By his death in 632, Arabia was united. Successor Abu Bakr crushed rebellious tribes, unleashing commanders like Khalid. The timing was perfect. Byzantine and Persian empires lay exhausted after decades of war. Damascus fell in 635, Ctesiphon in 637. Within a generation, Arab armies had shattered both empires. 6 centuries of Roman-Persian rivalry ended in mutual defeat, both carved up by a desert power that emerged with shocking speed. When Charlemagne inherited the Frankish kingdom in 768, he gained both a war machine and ambition. He conquered Lombards, Saxons, and Avars, stretching his empire from the Atlantic to the Danube. But he understood empires need more than conquest. From Aachen, he issued laws, built churches, and recruited scholars like Alcuin of York. Palace scribes produced perhaps 100,000 manuscripts during the 9th century, developing Carolingian minuscule, a revolutionary writing style with clear spacing and consistent lettering that enabled standardized governance across vast territories. On Christmas Day 800, Pope Leo crowned him Emperor and Augustus, then prostrated himself before him. This imperial title evolved into the Holy Roman Empire, lasting until Napoleon. Yet the achievement proved fragile. Louis the Pious's reign saw fracture, formalized in the Treaty of Verdun, 843. The lesson? Uniting Europe happens once or twice per millennium, never for long. Meanwhile, warfare transformed. At Lechfeld, 955, King Otto I deployed heavy cavalry with couched lances and stirrups, turning horsemen into guided missiles. Humans romanticized this violence into heroic literature. The Song of Roland elevated knightly deeds, while writers like Ramon Llull expanded knighthood beyond combat to spiritual virtues. Knights became paragons of courage, loyalty, and courtesy. William Marshall exemplified this, rising from landless fourth son to Earl of Pembroke through tournament prowess and unwavering loyalty. In November 1095, Pope Urban II's sermon at Clermont ignited 2 centuries of religious warfare. Responding to Byzantine Emperor Alexios I's plea against Turkish forces, Urban promised salvation to those liberating Jerusalem. The crowd roared, "Deus vult, God wills it." The campaign began with violence against Rhineland Jews. By 1097, about 80,000 armed pilgrims and 7,500 knights reached Constantinople. Despite scorching heat and harassment, they captured Nicaea, defeated Turks at Dorylaeum, and breached Jerusalem's walls on July 15, 1099. Apocalyptic slaughter followed, shocking even Christian chroniclers. The Fourth Crusade exposed the movement's moral bankruptcy. Instead of sailing to Alexandria, Crusaders sacked Zara, a Christian city, then Constantinople itself in 1204, unleashing horrific violence on fellow Christians. Yet the Crusades transformed Europe through cultural exchange. Crusaders returned with new foods, technologies, and ideas, encountering advanced Islamic scholarship, superior medical knowledge, and architectural innovations. The irony is inescapable. Holy war against Islam enriched Christian civilization with Islamic learning. Violence and enlightenment traveled together, inseparable companions on the road from Jerusalem. Born around 1162, clutching a clot of blood the size of a knuckle bone, Temujin survived his father's poisoning at age 9 through foraging and hunting. From this brutal beginning emerged Genghis Khan, creator of history's largest contiguous land empire. After uniting Mongol tribes in 1206, Genghis breached the Great Wall and sacked the Jin capital. When Khwarezmanian officials executed his 100-person diplomatic delegation in 1218, he responded with merciless vengeance, destroying Merv, Herat, Samarkand, and Nishapur. Pyramids of skulls marked his victories. Yet from this destruction emerged the Pax Mongolica, unprecedented connection between East and West. Mongol rule pacified dangerous regions, enabling long-distance trade with reliable paper money and tree-lined roads. Marco Polo's journey to Kublai Khan's court required Mongol security. After Mongka's death in 1259, the empire fractured into four khanates: the Great Yan in China, the Chagatai Khanate in Central Asia, the Il Khanate in Persia, and the Golden Horde in Russia. The Mongols didn't just conquer, they wired the world together, creating networks that outlasted their empire. The medieval world wasn't a dark interlude, it was the forge where our modern world was hammered into shape. Universities, hospitals, banking systems, legal codes, nation-states all emerged from this era. This wasn't the middle of anything, it was the beginning of everything.